and welcome in again to Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harland. I am your co-host, Brian Brown, and we are coming to you, as always, from the beautiful B.B. McKinney Studios in historic Nashville, Tennessee.
I have a question.
Yes, Mike.
Why are you in a chair that's a whole lot more comfortable than the one I'm in?
I'm just
curious.
I wasn't going to bring this to the listeners. This is a personal thing, dealing with some back issues, some back spasms.
Oh.
I think my leader is loaded so much on my shoulders.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
No,
and we've got, it must be cold there in your shadow.
Yes.
Or
yes.
In my shadow,
so
excuse me.
Yes. I'm in a softer chair today. Thank you for pointing that out, to try to ease the
I want
the
people
pain,
to have the visual.
Stress.
The visual.
And what they should also know is some doctor-prescribed muscle relaxant.
I can't wait to
hear
you talk.
So today should be an excellent podcast.
Your speech is slurred just a little bit,
well,
Brian.
It's going to be looser, but it's going to be just as important.
All right, let's keep all the expletives off the podcast.
Right. We will edit those out, thank goodness for technology. Mike, we do have a topic today that I wanted to ask you about. I don't know if it's the medication or what, but I'm not sure exactly what you're hitting on. Usually you and I are sometimes on the same page, which is frightening. But this time, you were talking about a blog you'd written and a topic I've heard you talk about many, many times. And I think I've heard you say over and over again this phrase related to worship. Keep the small circle first, related to worship, related to ministry. Keep the small circle first. What do you mean by that?
Well,
can you explain that?
Yeah, I realize it probably doesn't mean anything to anybody but me, but I can, at least I can explain what I'm trying to say. Think of ministry in concentric circles. Three concentric circles. There's a small circle, a circle a little bit bigger than that, and then a bigger circle, and then all of the space outside that biggest circle. Your biggest circle as a music leader and worship leader is your congregation. Right. Now, the space outside the big circle, that's the rest of the world. That's your community. That's the world. And certainly we have ministry that affects the world. As we get involved, and as certainly anybody that's writing songs or singing songs, there's ministry out there. But then that big circle is the congregation of your church. And then that next circle in are the people that are inside the organization that you directly lead. So that's your band, that's your
right.
choir members, that's your
department.
Your singers, the people that are in the ministry that are volunteers in your ministry that you lead that way. And I would say that you shepherd that way. That smallest circle is your own family. It's your spouse, it's your children. And so think about that in three circles: a big circle, congregation; a smaller circle is the ministry you lead; and that smallest circle is your family.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here's why I speak about this subject. Because as musicians and as worship leaders, and I would say to a large degree, this is true of any staff position on the church, we are in a production work.
Right.
We're in a production business. We are with an assembly of volunteers, some paid staff, you know, in different settings. Sometimes some of these people are paid, but most often we're working with volunteers. And week after week after week, season after season after season, we are producing something that is on a platform that larger numbers of people are going to come experience. So we're in this cycle all the time of producing. And very often, especially in music, I would say every ministry faces this to some degree, but I would say it's even more accented in music, because we're not only are we producing, we are producing an art that in and of itself can be very satisfying and fulfilling, and it's very demanding. It requires practice, practice, practice. You know the old joke, how do you get to Carnegie Hall from here?
No Phil Barfoot.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
well,
practice,
yeah,
practice,
you could
practice,
know Phil right, Barfoot. Yeah. It'd help you get there.
Right.
But practice, practice, practice.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're in this discipline that has the tendency to consume us. Add a layer on top of that of a production value, and think about that seasonally, like at Christmas when your right. church is doing the big community thing that you do every year and you've done all these years. And then sometimes that smallest circle, our family, can be the one we think about the least and that we invest in the least. Mm. And this is a guy talking to you today that's a little further down the road that can't go back and do Little League Baseball over again with my oldest son.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say to you that that I had this real dysfunctional experience as a father. Now, not that at all. God was so gracious to our family, and I was so gracious to have a wife that understood the dynamics of a minister's family, having grown up as a pastor's daughter herself. Right. So we had a very strong family, but here's the point I want to make, is that it goes by so fast, and that the tendency we have in this production environment is to put that small circle last. And they get the leftovers and the overflow of what we're doing instead of being thought of first. And if I understand what the Bible teaches, our first responsibility as church leaders, the most important small group in our church is the one we lead at home. And the energy that we pour in there is the energy that has the potential to have the longest and most significant impact for eternity on the people that are living under the same roof with us.
Okay, Mike, so talk to me about some signs. Maybe I'm you know, obviously the things that are default, you know, if family comes first, it's become a cliche. So maybe I don't notice it when I'm failing to keep that smallest circle first. So what are some signs, for practical signs as a minister of music, that you would say if you were mentoring a young minister of music and you were watching his ministry as a mentor, what would be the signs you would be looking for that you could share with this young leader? Hey, you know, when you start doing this, that's a sign that you're putting those outer circles ahead of the inner circle. What are some things to look for, some warning signs that you might be doing it?
If you struggle when you are in those family moments, if you struggle turning off the rest of your world, like you're listening to your daughter talk to you, but you're also answering an email on your phone, or you're chasing a social media thread that you've been watching all day long, and you're there, but you're not really all there. We live in such a fast-paced world now where everybody's multitasking all the time. Put your phone down, Brian. I mean, we're all
just checking some box
scores. Put that up. Yeah.
Okay.
We're checking email. We're checking text messages. We're all this stuff. And we live in this so crazy. We're communicating more than ever. I would say it this way. We're saying more than ever in more channels than ever. And we're communicating less and less because we're never really all anywhere. If your work and if the what you're producing in your ministry has consumed you to the degree that you can't even have a meal with your family without staring at your phone and interacting with other people on the internet while all that's happening, you've hit a place that's unhealthy for your family. You know, kids catch more than they learn. They catch what our priorities are. They might hear us say what our priorities are. They might hear us verbalize how we're what we feel about them, but they actually observe that more than they hear that. When we are completely distracted when we're with our family. And here's what I have found. I mean, Brian, I'll use an analogy. If you were going down the interstate and you're going 70 miles an hour, and which is the speed limit, by the way, Brian, I don't know if you knew that, but it's 70.
It's usually 70.
Yeah, usually there. But if you started seeing these big signs that said road construction ahead, reduce speed, 60 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, and it's asking you to slow down, but you're not slowing down. You're seeing the signs, and then you see the sign that says fines double if you get caught here, you know, and you still aren't slowing down. But then in the distance, you see a state trooper. What do? You start slowing down real quick.
Yes.
All right. So here's what I would say. That transition from the fast pace of a ministry environment and a production environment to your home is a slowdown zone speed. You're in a high velocity atmosphere when you're at work. And now you're going to, and this is one of the reasons we struggle with focusing on the small circle, is the environment at home is so much slower. We are, I've been making decisions like 100 miles an hour here at work. And when I get home, if I don't shut that down, if I don't hit the brakes, if I don't take it off cruise control, I find myself bored with what happened in my son's day. I find myself really uninterested. My wife went to the store. She bought a couple of things. I'm not even interested in that. That's at 20 miles an hour. I'm still going 70 because I'm popping like that. That's why my phone is out. That's why my iPad is open. That's why I can't focus on anything because I'm still operating at 70 miles an hour. If we could build some slow down signs in our life that say, hey, we're about to move into the small circle. I'm going to start hitting the brakes, and I'm going to get to that point that by the time I'm sitting with my family at dinner, I'm at that speed in that zone. Think of it as the school zone, how critical it is that everybody goes the right speed in the school zone. When you're with your family, you need to have it off cruise control. You need to shut it down and begin to really focus in on the slower, simpler conversations that you need to have with your family. And the real cliche way that I like to say it is, wherever you are, be all there. If you're at work, be all at work. If you're at home, though, be all at home and focus on that small circle. I want to say this to worship leaders, and this is a really big statement that I've got to admit is quite convicting to me, because I think back to many years when I wasn't smart enough to think about things like this. You really don't have much credibility standing in front of a congregation leading worship if it's 5,000 people, if you're not able to leave the five people that are inside your house. In those moments of worship and reflection and interaction where you're leading them spiritually, we got to focus on the small circle first.
So, Mike, I can hear some people maybe out in our audience saying, that sounds fantastic. I agree with you. I know the scriptural precepts about leading your family if you want to be a leader in the congregation, but you don't know my pastor. And you don't know the expectations he puts on me. Mm-hmm. So talk about the unrealistic expectations of the members or whatever it might be. So talk to us about how a minister of music can talk to his pastor about this need once he recognizes maybe that he's not focusing like he should on the small circle first. How do you approach your pastor or maybe those people that have expectations and explain, you know, I don't know if you've had that exact situation before with an overbearing kind of a leader that the expectations just get over and over. Mike's not nodding his head and thinking about a former pastor right now. So since you can't see him, I'll tell you, he's not nodding. And if you're one of his former pastors, he's not thinking about you. But theoretically, this overbearing pastor keeps increasing expectations. How do you manage that relationship with your pastor and keep that circle?
Here's two things that I say. I'd really say three things come to mind. And the reason I think of that this is because I've had this experience more than once. The first thing is prayer. It really is prayer. We can, because we're working in a fallen world and the people we work with have the same tendencies that everybody else does. It's very easy. And I expect that most people listening to us today are either experiencing that right now or have experienced it and can relate to what your question is asking. And I would say there are circumstances where there isn't a quick, easy answer. And all you have to do is do this and it would solve it. And that's one of them. I mean, so you really have to say, God, you've got to help me with this because you know the situation I'm in, and God does know. And then I would say a second resource is your spouse. I think about Teresa, and we have a partnership. We understand that the first circle in the concentric circles of ministry is the most important circle. It doesn't mean that we've always gotten that right, but Teresa and I would hold each other accountable at this point. You know, if I was distracted or absent in my mind from the conversation or uninvolved, because I was in some kind of high stress situation, maybe something was going on with my pastor, I had a wife that would stand in that gap for me, or would even challenge me at that point. And honesty about our conversation and relationship, where we could say, "Hey, we really need you to zone out here and get back with us." I mean. Yeah. And so you realize that you've got a partner in this, and hopefully your spouse is helping you navigate this. And if you haven't had that conversation with your spouse, I would encourage you to sit down and really do an honest assessment. Honey, when we're in these settings at home, do you feel like I'm distracted? Am I contributing enough to the family dialogue and to the soundtrack of our family? I'm spending all this energy creating the soundtrack for the church. What is the soundtrack of our family like? And am I leading it the way I should. And if you can be honest about that and get an honest assessment, and then you can actually appeal to one another to help each other in the challenging seasons. And then the third thing, I love the power of great questions. So, Brian, if you were my pastor and I felt like something you were asking me to do was making it hard for me to succeed in this first area of responsibility, I think I'd go to my pastor and say, Pastor, respectfully, I really want to do a great job here in my ministry at church, and I want to meet every expectation that is humanly possible for me to meet. And I want to meet your expectations, but I also feel a responsibility in my family. And right now, I don't feel like I'm balancing with my family well enough. Pastor, could you help me? I wouldn't do it in a threatening way. Pastor, you got to change. No, I'd go to the pastor and say, could you help me manage this better and balance this better? And ask the pastor, how do you do it? And maybe the pastor might have to admit, you know, I'm not very good at it either. Mm-hmm. And if he needs to realize that, then that's a great conversation that maybe the two of you can share and even hold each other accountable for. Can I give a personal story, a recent story?
Sure.
Eric Geiger is the vice president of Lifeway in the resource area. He's the gentleman that I work directly with. He is my supervisor of the resource area. And Eric has a beautiful family. His wife Kay has two beautiful girls. He has a high stress, highly demanding responsibility here at Lifeway. And I can observe, even from a distance, how he leads his family well. He's got such a relationship with those girls, and you see that daddy time. You understand that he's leading that first circle first, and that it's a priority for him. And I watch he and Kay as they interact with each other. They don't have a perfect family. None of us do. But there's such a health about how he talks about her and how they relate to each other. And I can observe that from my perspective, working directly with him. Well, what that enables me to do when I have a leader that is sensitive to those issues himself, now I have a way that I can talk to him about my own family. Hey, Eric, I really feel like I need to spend a little extra time in the morning because of this is happening here or whatever. And I find Eric to be very understanding. It's all about communication and trust. And it's all about helping him understand what's important to you. And what's important to you is also important to him in his own family dynamic. So it is a matter of great communication, not complaining, not criticism, not threatening, but asking great questions and trying to achieve together a balance that keeps that first circle strong.
No doubt. And Mike, we would both admit, I mean, there are times in ministry, in partnership with your wife, when all of those methods fail, and sometimes you do have to pray and seek God's guidance. And there are times when it is time to relocate your ministry to a place where you can put that priority on family.
It can happen. That's where that prayer part comes in.
No doubt. I worked for a guy one time that told me, I'll never forget, he said, Brian, I've been without a job, and I've been without a family. And I can tell you which one I'd rather be without.
Wow, what a great word. Say that again.
Yeah, I've been without a job, and I've been without a family. And I could tell you I'd much rather be without a job than without a family.
Wow, so, strong statement.
Just if it comes to that point, and we pray that it doesn't, and I really think that most of the time the prayer, the asking the right questions, the approaching it in the right way, having your wife on your side, I think the vast majority of the time God's going to intervene there. But there, when it does come to that time where maybe you really feel like you're having to make a choice, even in that difficult moment, Mike, I think your advice is right. Keep the small circle first.
I've got a couple of final points I want to make, and then we probably are out of time on this subject. But here's one to – I really want you to watch this, these guys, and I feel this too. Pressure does funny things to people. And some people handle it some ways, and some people handle it other ways. I'll give you a perfect example. You know, when the New England Patriots fell behind, what was it, 28-3? Was that the?
Yes.
It was 28-3. It's in the third quarter.
Right.
And you would think, okay, all the pressure, there's so much pressure on them right now that there's no way they're going to come back and win this game. Mm-hmm. And, of course, in the Super Bowl last year, the Patriots do, in fact, come back, tie it up, and win the game.
Right.
There are Tom Brady people that respond to pressure that way, that just stay cool under fire. You never know. But I want to tell you, more often what you're going to see is the person that gets a little bit stressed and a little panicked. Their personality changes. Their focus is compromised. They have a hard time making decisions because the pressure and the stress. And I've seen this so much. I've seen it in me. The big singing Christmas tree. I'm going back 20 years sure. now, but the big singing Christmas tree is 3 weeks away, and the set for whatever is not done yet. I mean, and you see these church settings where the pressure starts building, and we actually start frying the families of the people that we're serving with a terse, curt, short, high pressure, almost. You know, in these settings, I say that church has two ministers of music, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, where under high stress, we become somebody that nobody wants to be around. Yeah. And boy, that's a sign right there that you're doing something wrong if there's not a flow and a joy about the work where you're not abusing your family and you're not abusing anybody else's family because you're rehearsing every night till midnight, 3 weeks leading up to the big production. Something has gotten out of whack. If you have something going on in your ministry that requires you to sacrifice your own family and sacrifice the families of the people you are serving with, then you're doing something wrong in your ministry. Because that they should never be on the altar for the success of the ministry. And if they are, something has to change. But here's the second thing I want to say. Somebody's out there listening to this and going, man, I am guilty, guilty, guilty. I mean, and maybe you're not saying that out loud, but you know this is an area where you got to improve. I would encourage you to not just hold on to that thought, but to actually act on it. As soon as you finish the podcast, call your spouse and say, we need to talk about something, and sit down together, maybe listen to this again together and say, I want to improve on this. Can we pray about that together? Can we talk about some things and some changes that I can make in my routine that would put that first circle first? And would you help me address this? And I would say there may even be somebody out there that needs to apologize to their family. Mm-hmm. I've actually put you guys through it, and I am so sorry. Because here's what I want to tell you. The enemy, Brian, what you said a while ago was so strong. I've lost a job and I've lost a family. I'd much rather lose a job. Mm-hmm. The enemy has convinced you that you've got to do this to be worth anything or to keep your job. And that's the enemy telling you that. He has come to steal and to kill and to destroy. And if he can wipe your family out, as a matter of fact, if you're under stress and struggling in this area, he's probably tempting you in other ways. We've got to put the first circle first. And we got to love on our family as well. And I hope this podcast has helped somebody out there realize that.
Amen. Well, as always, this topic came to us from listening to you. So if you're a listener, the Worship Life podcast with Mike Harland, if you visit our Worship Life blog, or if you're just a customer of Lifeway Worship or serving a church out there, just want you to know that we want to talk about the topics that interest you. So email us, worship@lifeway.com, and let us know. You can also let us know by rating and reviewing programs that mean a lot to you so that other people can be able to find them. And we want to be sure you join us here. We have a new podcast every week now. We've gone to a weekly schedule. So if you know someone involved in worship ministry that could benefit from these topics and these discussions, please let them know about the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harland. I'm your co-host, Brian Brown. As always, let us know how we can pray for you here at Lifeway Worship. And until next time, from the B.B. McKinney Studios in Nashville, Tennessee, the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harland will be back next week. Until then, we'll be praying for you. Thanks.